I want to tell you about a podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. As a parent myself of a child who's had an IEP since kindergarten and he's now a 10th grader, I know how confusing, overwhelming, frustrating, sometimes daunting the whole process can be. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans. And what I love about it is how easily Juliana explains everything. She answers common questions that probably every parent or caregiver has. She dispels myths and is concise and to the point. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. And there's a direct link in the show notes if you need it.
I had to be in the experience of consciously breathing that love in, surrendering the fear, crying. And it's amazing how when you become the observer of that type of experience, that the truth surfaces, that feeling that whatever it is that you need to hear or understand, the light bulb moment, for me, it really, really shows up, but not until I like shut it down. I'm talking about I'm not worried what other people are thinking. I'm not on social media. I have to like isolate, shut it down, and for 10 to 20 minutes, swirl. And eventually that's the way for me that I shift. And it was amazing. I could breathe and my back pain subsided within 20 minutes. It was that instant.
You're listening to Make Some Noise Podcast, episode number 403 with guest Jess King. Welcome to Make Some Noise Podcast, your guide for strategies, tools, and insight to empower yourself. I'm your host, Andrea Owen, global speaker, entrepreneur, life coach since 2007, and author of 3 books that have been translated into 18 languages and are available in 22 countries. Each week, I'll bring you a guest or a lesson that will help you maximize unshakable confidence, master resilience, and make some noise in your life. You ready? Let's go. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast, to the 8-episode series that I'm calling Make Some Noise on the Make Some Noise podcast to celebrate my book, Make Some Noise. How original. Well, I didn't want to title it anything else because I hand selected these women, and these are women who are making noise in their life that I have noticed. And I wanted to ask some questions. How did you do it? What are you doing? Were you raised this way? Did you get special lessons from your parents or mentors growing up? Tell us everything. And this episode with our guest today is going to be incredibly helpful to you. I have known Jess King for a while now, and she was one of the last people I had lunch with in person before the bottom dropped out in early March 2020. I was in Manhattan, and we hooked up, and it's sort of bittersweet, you know, those last few weeks that we had before COVID happened. But anyway, switching gears, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about something exciting. I'm offering a free book club for anyone who wants to join. Who doesn't love a book club? Who doesn't love a free book club offered by the author of the book that you are reading and that you like? We did this a few years ago when How to Stop Feeling Like Shit came out. It was a huge success, and I wanted to do it again for you all. If you have already signed up for the book bonuses, if you have pre-ordered Make Some Noise, this information should be already in there, and you should be on the list where you're going to get emails about the book club. Totally optional. You can unsubscribe if you don't want to join, or just ignore it. I would love to see you in there. It's really fun. We're going to do a pop-up Facebook group during the time that we have the book club. It starts towards the end of September, giving you some time to read it. I don't want anyone to feel rushed. And if you have not pre-ordered the book, You can do so at AndreaOwen.com/noise. And the reason that we push pre-orders so much, I've mentioned this a couple of times on the podcast, but for those of you who don't know, there is no other metric that retailers and publishers have other than the pre-order period. It's that first week that a book has it's called a pub date, a publication date. And so mine is August 31st. So anything sold before September 7th, which is, you know, August 31st to September 7th makes it a week, but anything pre-ordered before that counts as sold within that first week. One of the things I really want that's kind of a dream of mine is to see my book at Target. Neither of my first books have been at Target. They've been in bookstores, they've been in airports, and that's really exciting to see your book in an airport, but they've never been in a Target. I love Target. I want to be able to go in there and see it and make videos and embarrass my children and you know, hold it up and scream that it's me in my local Greensboro Target. And I asked my editor, will my book be in Target? And she said, they didn't buy it yet, but they're going to be watching. They're one of the retailers that's going to be watching to see how it sells. So my plea to you is to pre-order or buy it within that first week. It doesn't matter if it's audiobook or print or ebook, all sales go to this one stat that people are looking at to see. It's the only metric they have to see if it's a book is going to be successful. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be super successful, but it's the number they look at. Hence me begging and pleading with y'all to please pre-order the book. So book club starts end of September, AndreaOwen.com/noise. If you have already purchased the book, but you have not collected your bonuses, you can go over to AndreaOwen.com/MSN. And if you are having trouble, you can always contact us from our contact page and my team will help you out. So let's get a move on to this episode. Also, if you're listening to this via audio, all of these episodes are on video as well. I don't normally do this. It's usually just recorded on audio for the podcast, but for these 8 episodes, they're on video. So if you want to see sort of behind the scenes, what it looks like, my microphone and all that good stuff, as well as my beautiful, gorgeous guests, then hop on over to YouTube. The link will be in the show notes for you to be able to watch the episode as well as listen to it. Let me tell you a little bit about my guest today for those of you that don't know her. Jess King is a charismatic Peloton instructor with boundless energy and a passion for movement. With a background in dance, performance, and fitness, Jess grew up down south and moved to New York City to commit to a career in wellness. Jess's self-proclaimed sassy and spicy personality make her bike and tread classes uplifting and full of exciting surprises. Jess is committed to helping people heal from the inside out, and she believes that this community of Peloton is the perfect place to start that journey. Her focus is to partner with motivated individuals looking to transform their lives, and together they burn. So without further ado, here is Jess King. Hey, hey, Jess King. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello, Andrea Owen. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
I am doing my big mouth excited face for those people who are just listening on audio and not watching on video. My first question is, why not go over to the video and you can watch us talk? And I have so many questions for you. I have so many questions for you, all based around a lot of the topics I talk about and make some noise. And I was thinking about this particular series because I can't remember if I told you or not. This is a special series I'm doing just for this book promotion. And I chose a handful of women who I know make noise in their lives. And you were one of the first people I thought of.
Yep. I'm pretty loud.
A new guest to the show. A little bit. But that's not necessarily what making noise is. A woman who is maybe inherently more introverted, who likes to observe a little bit more before she speaks, she can definitely make noise in her life. So one of the things that I talk about in this book is asking for everything you want as a woman. And so tell us about a time where you have had to ask for something that you want, or just what generally, what is your take about that?
I ask for everything. My mom was an immigrant from Santiago, Chile. And so she was taught from a very young age, if you don't know, ask. And of course, that was before you could Google it, right? So I was in the habit of opening my mouth and asking for help. So much so that I think I had to look at it another way. It's like, can I answer this? And can I solve this on my own? Because I was so comfortable reaching out, asking for questions, telling people what it is that I wanted, that rather than recruit everyone around me, it was how much of agency could I take on myself to get the things that I wanted? And when I finally hit a wall or a roadblock, or I needed to collaborate with someone, that's when I would extend, you know, my hand and say, hey, excuse me, tug on a shirt, make some noise, get loud. Like, can you help me?
Okay. So for someone listening to this, who's like, I wasn't raised that way. And I don't ask for things. I just wait for someone to know what it is that I need and hope and cross my fingers that they're going to know and just hand it over. What advice would you have for her?
Well, here's the thing. If you don't ask, the answer is already going to be no.
Right.
By asking, you create the opportunity for the yes, or you create the opportunity for more information or resources to benefit whatever it is that you're going for. I mean, I think it's important to be with yourself for that moment and ask yourself, like, why am I so trapped? Why can't I say something? Is shame locking this in? Am I judging myself? Am I worried about what other people think about me? And if you're in that space and you're doing that work, then eventually you're going to get more comfortable opening your throat chakra, opening your mouth and speaking whatever's true for you. Even, you know, oftentimes, and I mean oftentimes at the expense of being wrong or looking stupid, or whatever it is, I just don't care about that piece of it because whatever it is that I want or that's behind the ask, I want it so, so bad that I'm not worried about what other people think. I'm not worried about the no, because if I don't ask, it's already a no. And look, in my experience, people want to help. People want to be part of something that has a lot of energy around it or something that's new or more oftentimes I get the yes.
I think also, what do you think about this? I've also put it on the other person that they're going to be boundaried enough to say no if they don't want to, or if it's actually a no, because I think often I internalize other people's, like, I make up what's going on over there. And I'm like, well, if I'm a little bit of a people pleaser, they're probably a people pleaser. And if I ask for what I want, even if they really don't want to, they're going to say yes. And I don't want them to do that. So I'm just not going to ask. Like, this is the mind fuck I've been through.
Wow. I spend note. That's, you see how much back and forth you just had with yourself?
I used to do that a lot, but now I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm going to give that. I know you and I are from the same coaching school, and it's the whole concept of that people are naturally creative, resourceful, and whole. I am going to hold that person that they are naturally creative, resourceful, and whole, and they are going to set their own boundaries and say no if they mean it.
And I don't know, maybe there's a little chip missing in me that I don't even think about. How the other person
unbothered.
I'm like, look, if that's on you, right? If you have a thing, if my asking triggers something for you, that's your thing to work out. Like, I got this, you know,
unbothered. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's talk about pleasure. Cause it's the very last chapter of my book, and pleasure's an interesting topic for women. So how do you make pleasure a priority in your life? You definitely strike me as someone who makes it a priority.
Well, yes, I do. And, you know, pleasure and pain are the same neuroreceptors in the brain, and they come from the same thing. So I have such a high pain tolerance that I get a lot of pleasure from going to my physical therapist and getting that, like, deep.
Are you a deep tissue massage person?
I pride myself on my ability to hold in a squeal or enjoy it. Whereas, like, I know some of my fellow colleagues, we go to the same physical therapist, and he'll be like, oh, this makes so-and-so, like, jump off the table. And I'm just like, give it to me. You know, like, I really love it. It is pleasurable for me to be in that heightened experience with myself. Same thing with stretching. oftentimes a lot of people feel like stretching is super uncomfortable, especially when you're, you know, stretching your nerves, then it like tingles and it burns and you just want to like unzip your skin and fly out. And I love it. I love being on that ride and just like, ooh. But in terms of like physical pleasure, actually receiving pleasure from a partner, from love, touch for me is a really big one. Being that like I give so much energy all day, every day, output. That is a huge part of my like healing, restorative, and also love language is receiving touch. So my partner, Sophia, is so good about that. She's constantly massaging me, rubbing me, touching me. But, you know, I will say as somebody who is a strong and intense individual for me, sometimes I'm armored and it is a challenging thing for me to let go and receive actual pleasure, not like pleasure from pain or pleasure from something that's extreme and forcing you into it, but just being vulnerable and like really receiving that intimacy. And so one of the things that I've gotten comfortable doing is communicating that. Like, yeah. Like, whoa, I don't know why, or, you know, it just is this way, but I feel really armored right now. Can we take it slow? Can you be less aggressive or whatever it is that I know I need in that moment so I can almost wade into the water as opposed to just like, you know, cannonballing kind of thing.
There's definitely been times in my life where my paycheck ran out before I got paid again, and I wish I could have accessed my next paycheck a few days before I was due to get it. Well, what if I told you that can happen with Earnin? Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. You can use Earnin for anything you need to, therapy visits, rent, or even extra self-help books. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Noise under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. Noise under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Trying to find the perfect gift for someone special in your life, maybe for Mother's Day, but feeling overwhelmed? Finding a unique gift that they'll love, that's personal and that they won't already have, can be the ultimate challenge. That's why I'm so excited I've discovered Songfinch. It's an amazing, thoughtful gift, and it's easy and fun to make. Songfinch lets you create an original radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. I had Songfinch make me a song about my dad, which was a gift to myself. This was such a personal song for me, and I was a little skeptical the artist could capture the emotion I wanted. But during the process, they have you share some personal details about your relationship with the person you're creating the song for. Then a Songfinch musician of your choice, you get to pick based on samples they have, will write, record, and produce your original song in just 4 to 7 days. I love my song so much. I was so emotional when I listened to it. I had no changes. It's perfect. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/noise and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/noise. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/noise.
That is such a good point. I'm glad that you brought that up. It made me think of something recently that happened in my marriage, and my husband would probably kill me if he knew that I was saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'll ask for forgiveness instead of permission.
Hey, that a girl.
He comes up to me. I think I probably wasn't wearing a bra. And he's like, can I fill you up? And I was like, thank you so much for asking. Like the whole concept of consent. And I think, you know, coming from a background of just being groped, like I won't name names, but just not asking permission and just feeling like my body was there for my partner's pleasure and my consent didn't really matter. It wasn't an option. And I made sure to tell him that, like, that makes me so happy and makes me feel so safe and loved. And yes, you can, but my answer sometimes might be no, probably very rarely, but it might be no, because it might not just don't right now. But I think that that is such a huge aspect of pleasure.
I really relate to how it oscillates. I mean, sometimes we go through some really intense life things, whether it's like high stress or maybe we're grieving something where like you can't even connect to that piece of you, or it's like, it's the last thing you want is to go there to have that experience. And so being okay with that as a woman, being okay with that in a partnership it takes a lot of courage because we've been programmed or maybe we've just bought into the narrative that if you are in a committed relationship, then you have to make yourself physically available at all times. And like, absolutely not. You know, we are individuals first and we choose to come together and share our bodies, our time, our energy, really unraveling that and redefining what that means and being at choice, even though we choose the partnership, right? You see the ring on my finger, you know, I'm choosing you. I choose you every day, but really, you know, we own our bodies and we own our space. And don't you want as the other partner to also say, I do want that too, you know, that you're both saying, yeah, we both agree to this. We both want, there's something sexier about that than just being like, okay, I have to just, you know, I have to do this because it's my duty.
Right.
I call bullshit on that.
Let's talk about self-confidence. And how do you define self-confidence? Like if someone did not know what that term was, how would you describe it?
Oh, this is funny because I'm somebody who walks confidently in the wrong direction all the time.
I do too. Did we talk about this when we met?
Maybe. I think so.
People follow me and they're like, do you know where we're going? And I'm like, absolutely not. We've been walking for like 10 minutes.
And we're like, right this way.
I didn't even realize I do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So this thing about confidence, you know, it was instilled in me as a little girl. My mom, you know, she was like, she would hype me up constantly. She would tell me I was the prettiest. She would tell me, you know, so much so that I remember being in my 20s and moving to New York and I called my mom and I was like, I'm not a princess. Like, what? Why would you have just found out? Told me my whole life that I'm this princess? I'm not a princess. I wish you would stop because it would, you know, the real world was really, really harsh. So again, I'm coming from the other side of it. But, you know, I think at the root of self-confidence, it really comes back to that piece of being naturally creative, resourceful, and whole, that there is this, like, everything you need is within you already. And learning to fall in love with what that is, what that looks like for you, what makes you interesting, what makes you weird, what makes you hypervigilant, you know, what you're good at, what you're terrible at, all of it. Just falling in love with that and owning it entirely and, you know, really just not giving a shit what people think. It really comes down to that. I think the times in my life when I have doubted myself or my confidence has dropped, the one thing that really influenced that was getting wrapped up in how I would be received and what other people thought of me. So it was divorcing that and really just owning it. I think this is going to be controversial, but I mean, I believe that I'm great.
I love how you prefaced that. Like, let's just stop right there. I want to ask, like, what made you preface it with this is going to be controversial?
Well, because it feels like it's not okay to say that.
Right. Well, that's patriarchy talking.
It feels like owning our power and owning our wholeness and our femininity and our sexuality and what makes us incredible is something that we have to be humble about. And that mm-hmm. humility is important. You know, hello, I'm not a princess. But it also is, and I have seen it, had become this like pretty toxic ceiling for so many people. Like, oh, I can't celebrate what I'm good at. I can't put myself out there. I can't be loud or make noise because I'm going to offend someone. Honey, I feel like sometimes that just my existence in and of itself offends people. Mm-hmm. If I was worried about that, you know who taught me this? Amy Smith. Amy Smith was like, there are, I don't even know, 8 billion people in the world, or however how many billions of people, to think that all of them are supposed to like you is insanity. And I thought, you know what? You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So rather than focus on worrying about that, it was more just about like honoring myself and really needing to be able to fall asleep at night feeling complete about the how I had shown up in the world that day. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe it's just how I am or who I am. But I've been overly confident for many,
since
many
1985.
Since 1985. But it's really opened a lot of doors for me. I think because of that reason, I haven't fed into the fear that really is a detrimental piece in anytime you're going after something major. Like I remember going after auditioning for So You Think You Can Dance. And I had auditioned for season 3, made it to Vegas, and got cut and was like, okay, I know what it's going to take now to get on the show. So I trained for a whole year. And I remember, I was like physically training. I was in the dance studio. I was running. I was, you know, doing all the things, but really it was a mental conditioning in boot camp that I was in to really just stop listening to the voices of fear and self-doubt and comparison and really just focus on the love that I had for this art form and for this dream of mine to be on this show. And it was, I mean, I had just gotten my hands on The Secret. So I was like playing.
Oh, same.
Right. And I was like, oh,
that changed your life.
Totally changed my life. I'm like, oh, if I think about the things that I want instead of the things that I don't want, mm-hmm. I get them. Cool. And I mean, it still remains to be like my favorite tool. I'm like, switch the mind up.
Pepper in enormous amounts of privilege and we are doing great.
Well, I think that is a huge part of it too, right?
It's a both and.
Mm-hmm. Is that, I was hyper confident, but I was incredibly privileged with the opportunity and with the support and the resources necessary to develop a skill and do good at it. So I'm really grateful to that. It doesn't slip by me that I have been privileged in that way. And therefore I feel a tremendous responsibility to make my voice even louder, to share, to connect, to lift up others. Yeah. And I get really, if you can't tell, I get pretty excited about it.
I'm great. No, I love that. I love that. And you and I are very similar in that. And I think that part of it, like we have similar upbringing. So my dad, I just realized this not that long ago. I've talked about this on the show, I think one other time. When I was little, I played tennis and my dad for many of those years was my tennis coach. And one of the things that he told me was to, when given the opportunity, always rush the net. Even if you don't think you can make the shot, because it's an aggressive form of playing and it will intimidate your opponent. Even if you're not a better player than they are, they're going to be a little nervous at the girl who keeps rushing the net. And I took that and internalized that as, oh, it's okay to be intimidating, coupled with the fact that I have a gregarious and outgoing personality and have been called intimidating, not so many times to my face, a little bit like in a joking manner, but I've heard a lot of stories of people saying that I was intimidating, both men and women, and being a little taken aback by it, especially like in my 20s. And then moving into my 30s, I was like, I could care less. Like, if you're intimidated by me, then that's not my responsibility. 100%. That is just you are buying into the society's standard of how a woman should be. And if I were a man, I doubt that you would have called me that. And I might have been congratulated for it. And it was not super easy to shake that. But I think because of what my dad had taught me, it was a little bit easier. I say all this because people listening, even if you didn't grow up with a mom who told you you were a princess or a dad told you it was okay to be intimidating both on and off the court, you can still unlearn that. And it's about the first step, I believe, is just questioning where it came from. My friend Elizabeth Zialto asked me this great question, and I wrote about it in the book. She said, ask yourself, what is my conditioning and what is my truth? Mm. I was like, that is a great question to ask, because a lot of times, like, the voice in our head isn't our truth.
Right. But you've patterned it so many times that it has become truth. So to unravel it takes a tremendous amount of awareness. To your point about being intimidating, I still hear that. I still hear that. And part of me is like, good, good. I hope I make you scared. Now listen up.
I was trying.
Yeah. Nailed it. But you know, at first I, like you, would be like, offended, like, no way, how? I'm so nice, like, my intention is so good. And then, you know, really understanding the difference between intention and impact.
Don't be an asshole. Like, that's not what intimidating is. And I have been an asshole and had to
but honestly, it's like, you know, if somebody has a big energy or they're vocal or they advocate for themselves, it gets twisted to be like, oh, they're intimidating. Mm-hmm. And you know, most people that I know that are successful that I look up to are disagreeable. And I would tend to say that I am too. I do it in a loving way, but you know, you're not going to get what you want by being a yes person or without rocking the boat a little bit, making people feel you. You know, mm-hmm. it's part of the way that I motivate is to get people to feel my passion. Yeah, that's intimidating because it goes beyond, you know, my body. It's big and you can feel it in a room or virtually. I mean, this is what I do on the bike, right? I have to penetrate the fourth wall. I have to get through their camera and I have to figure out a way to make them feel something powerful and meaningful while we're moving together. For me, I celebrate being intimidating, or rename that is having the courage to put my whole self out there.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck. And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it? We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. So, join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Get out of there, life gunk. Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January. Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking it.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
Well, we touched on this a little bit about, you know, these societal kind of, you know, myths that many women buy into about what it means to be a good woman, you know, accommodating. We touched on, you know, for many of us, it was that your body is for the male gaze. You know, good girls don't have a lot of sex, et cetera. Were there any of those myths and conformities that you bought into that you had to unlearn?
I prided myself on being a rebel and being a little naughty and being bad. I think what I had to unravel from that was the shame of allowing myself to be so free, to be so promiscuous, to be so expressive, and how I was a promiscuous teenager. Kind of got myself into some squirrely romantic partnerships as well. Definitely when I was younger, especially growing up in the South, I was really shamed by some of the men in my life, boyfriends, about you know, my behavior, and felt like, you know, that I was supposed to feel guilty about it, but I didn't. So it was this, like, what do I do with this information? And for me, it was like, I just got to get out of here.
Oh, you mean get out of the relationship?
Get out of the South. I'm like, without making anyone wrong, it was like, I just don't fit here. These are small-minded concepts of how people are supposed to behave and supposed to be. And I intuitively knew at a young age, I'm like, I don't fit in. And I tried to change. I tried to conform, you know, go to church, wear all the things. And I'm like, I can't do this. This is not who I am. So I'm out.
It's interesting. It's really interesting to, you know, to look back on our past and see the choices that we made, the people that we were with, the judgments that we took on. And that's my biggest advice for people is question the source. Again, it's that question of what is your conditioning and what is your truth? And then kind of start to coach yourself and unravel that. What does that actually mean to you? What do you need to unlearn, if anything? And that's what a lot of the book is. Okay. What does resilience look like for you? Like, is there, like, tell us about a time you had to kind of pick yourself up when you fell on your face.
I feel like I do this every day.
This morning.
Yeah. I mean, every day. I mean, even yesterday. Sophie and I do not argue very often, but we got into it, and in the middle of getting into it, I had to like pick myself up and get on a live conversation, you know, as if everything in my life was fine. I have had so much training being a performer my whole life, being a very emotional and expressive and unafraid to feel my emotions. You know, I can't even tell you how many times I will have been in a crisis or some sort of emotional thing. And then it's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. That little red light is on and hello. And now we're fine. And now we're dancing and now we're, you know, but I'm so grateful for that because for me, and I know this is true for a lot of us, but for me, like I just get so wrapped up in the fear talk, in the ego talk, in whatever it is that is keeps pulling me into that lower vibration or that, or the anxiety or the stress, and performance and dance and ultimately being a professional has forced me to pull myself out of it and not just fake it, but surrender it, like really let go of the ego around it and be somewhere else that is more true, somewhere else that is joyful and loving. And there is this like inner tug of war of like, oh, I need to feel shitty. It's like, no, you get to feel great. It's like, no, you have to feel shitty. It's like, no, you have to smile. And eventually, you know, they say like, if you just smile, like you actually feel the benefit of that. That's what performance has done for me. And it's taught me resilience. And it's taught me that I have a choice. I can swirl and spiral and stay there, or I can communicate. I can feel it. I can go. I don't hesitate. If I'm like, ooh, I know what's going on. Here's an example. I have back pain from when I was on So You Think You Can Dance. I broke my ribs, or my ribs were broken. different ways you can say that. And so for me, anytime I get stressed or worried or fearful, I have a psychosomatic response in my back and it locks up and I feel pain. And I knew it was happening. I didn't really know why I was being triggered though. I didn't have anything on my heart. I wasn't sure what was going on in my head. And I just remember feeling so much like anxiety around my ribs, not able to breathe and feeling totally locked. And I sat there and I said, just go straight to it, go straight to it. And immediately my fear came up. And rather than push it aside, it's almost like I just like dive straight in, like head first, like smash into the fear. Like, I want to understand you. I want to process you. I am here to let the love in. And moving into this like breathing mantra, inhale love, exhale fear, inhale light, exhale pain. You are safe. I love you no matter what. I will tell you, for about 10, 20 minutes being in that process of, like you said, coaching yourself, of diving into your fear and like literally swirling around in that thing that I've been putting off all week long, so much so I wasn't even consciously aware that I had this fear, but it is profound. I was at the nail salon when I did this, by the way. I was in public and I knew what was going on. And so I said, she was doing my pedicure. I have a very close relationship with my nail lady. Shout out to Helen. And I said, Helen, before you do my mani, can you rub my back for me? And she started rubbing my back and I just started weeping and weeping and weeping. And like, knowing full well, I didn't need to attach to the tears or to the emotion, that fear was working its way through me and it was okay. And I was totally safe, but this is just what it looked like. Like, I had to be in the experience of consciously breathing that love in, surrendering the fear, crying. And it's amazing how when you become the observer of that type of experience, that the truth surfaces. That feeling, that whatever it is that you need to hear or understand, the light bulb moment, for me, it really, really shows up, but not until I like shut it down. I'm talking about I'm not worried what other people are thinking. I'm not on social media. I have to like isolate, shut it down. And for 10 to 20 minutes, swirl, mm-hmm. swirl. And eventually that's the way for me that I shift. And it was amazing. I could breathe and my back pain subsided within 20 minutes. It was that instant.
That is something I learned from Amy Smith. Is that like processing? Because before I used to feel it and then be like, how can I orchestrate my way around this? How can I not feel this? And it was either, pretending things were okay, changing the subject, putting the emphasis on the other person, like whatever it was, or sometimes I would come at it with anger, whatever it was I could do to not feel it. And Amy said, this was right when I got sober, actually, in 2011. And I was going through something with one of my kids and I was crying. And she said, is this the first time you've ever gone through something really hard sober, and not been able to drink? And I was like, yeah, it is. And she was like, what if feelings are just your body's way of taking care of itself? And I was like, fuck off.
It's super unpleasant. It's beyond.
But it's true.
Mm-hmm. And with addiction and substance, it's so interesting. Where like, some friends of mine, had gotten hooked on the Juul,
Oh yeah. Like the vape thing.
It's like a vape cigarette thing, super addictive, yeah. Nicotine, whatever. Look, I don't have any judgments. I'm just here to tell you what I observed. And when it's time for them to put it down, it becomes very, very emotional. A, because it's like a pacifier, right? So, when you're feeling a certain way, you're feeling stressed or you don't want to deal, you lean into that thing, whether it's smoking weed or drinking or whatever substance it is. What happens when they put it down is there's this thought that, oh, I'm going to be able to just put this down and walk away without any consequence because I have decided that I don't want it anymore. Right. Once you get to that point of like, I'm making the decision to put this down and walk away. Even if you are not consciously aware, the body still has to go through withdrawal. The body still has to process this new emotion and go through that experience. So being okay with that, knowing that it sucks. Like it really, really sucks, but it's not that deep. For me, I like to just try and tell myself if when I'm going through anything like that, any even sort of an emotional thing of that nature, I'm like, okay, cool. This is here, but this is not who I am. And this too is going to pass. So don't attach, like I would do this with my hands because it's like oftentimes we like sink our claws into these feelings as if they are forever and they mean something because they're so bright in our body. This must mean something outrageous because of how it feels. But ultimately, you know, your body has a physical intelligence. We have emotional intelligence and it all just works together to move itself through you. That's why I love movement and exercise and fitness, because for me, it personally, I mean, it changes your chemistry immediately. And exercise is like an exorcism of emotions, of fear, of pain, of self-doubt. For me, it accelerates that process of remembering who I actually am, not these wild feelings that happen when we make decisions to reclaim our power, reclaim our lives.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, I have one more question. And it's just a general, no big deal question. And what advice do you have for women who might struggle to take up space in their lives?
My advice would be learn to take up space in your body first.
What does that look like?
Yeah. So an exercise that we would do if we were like super low energy or like marking it in dance classes, our teacher would have us sit on the floor. We could sit in whatever position we wanted to. And then the idea, which she would say, like, you know, energize your spine. And so you would really like, come on, do it with me now. Right. So like energize your spine, like take up space. Right. So like, you're just thinking about taking up space, you know, out of your head, through your tail. And it's like, okay, now your hands are out here to the side. Now, good. Now try and touch the walls, take up space, hold it. Now your heart, open your heart. So eventually you want to get your whole body 360 degrees, like a sunshine, taking up space. And she would say, this is what I want from you. This is how I want you to move, this full, this big. And it was just something that I found to be incredibly powerful. I'm only 5'3", but when you would watch me dance or watch me perform, I just take up the whole stage. And that's because I'm extending my energy beyond my body and getting to a point where for women, we're men or people alike who are feeling like they need to apologize or shrink themselves energetically or physically. When you connect to your physical body, the power of it, and you say, no, I'm not even going to apologize for this, but this is what the request is, to open up and feel what it's like to stretch, to take my essence, my aura, and push it out beyond my skin. It's really powerful. People feel it. People are intimidated by it, but it is a radical experience within yourself when you don't have to apologize for physically taking up space anymore.
Right.
What begins to transform and transpire from having that agency and having that connection with yourself.
I love that exercise. Thank you so much. I hope people rewind and go back and do it. And oh yes. I love it when somebody's on and like there's something that I've never heard before or seen before. And I'm like, oh, it feels like a feast. Tell Sophia I said hi.
I will.
And I want to tell you something really quick about Sophia, because I met her very briefly last year. That was like right before the bottom dropped out with COVID.
It was. You snuck in a
little
vacation. You
were like the last lunch I ever had with the human. And when I met Sophia, first you were like, let me make sure she's not naked. And then when I came in, she's one of those people, And Amy was this way when I first met her, that like, I could see why you fell in love with her. Like, and I hope you don't take this as like, I'm trying to take your woman. She just exudes beauty and sensuality and light. And I was just like, you know, when you meet those people, like, I'm sure you do, because you felt that when you met her.
I remember meeting her because I had never been with a woman before. I'm not, you know, people say, well, what, how do you identify? I'm like, however you want me to. Do you want me to be gay? Mm-hmm. Do you want me to be bisexual? Do you want me to be a lesbian? I really don't care. Like, personally, it's whatever you want me to be. But when I, you know, I didn't have an agenda, right? I walked in and I saw her and was like, was just like overwhelmed by the desire to want to be near her, to be around her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am not threatened at all by what you just said, because I see it all the time. I see it happening with
you. See other people,
yeah. And they're like, and I'm like, I know, I get it.
I know.
I totally get it.
That's what I wanted to tell you that, because I immediately, like when I saw her, I was like, oh, okay, I get it. It's light that just like lights up the space that she's around, and her smile and everything. So I'm just so happy for you.
Thank
that
you.
You are engaged. Thanks. And that you have found somebody to love and that loves you back.
Me too. We're always like, you know, we have these moments where we check in. We're like, is this real? Like, do we really love each other as much as we think we do? Because like, I'm obsessed with you. She's like, I'm obsessed with you. We're like, whoa, this is crazy. Like, it's 6.5 years and we're still just like so excited and curious and have so much energy for one another and what we're creating together. It's really thrilling. I feel super blessed and grateful. And this is why I just, you know, I'm a huge proponent of love, however it shows up in your mm-hmm. life, whether you have a deep connection in your friendships or romantically or whatever it is, but this shit will change your life. It will heal you. Yep. It will heal you. And I'm really blessed.
And it also seems like you two really like each other.
Yeah.
Like beyond love. Like that matters a lot. Like I really like my husband, and that, I mean, cause I was in a marriage where I didn't like my ex-husband very much. I loved him, but like him, no, not really.
And that's a big deal. Matters. Cause I didn't feel, mm-hmm. I didn't feel liked by my other partners. I even Same. Remember looking at my ex and being like, you don't even like me. What are mm-hmm. what are we doing here? You know, like it's obvious you don't like me. And so that is a really big deal. And yeah, we do like each other.
Thank you, Jess. Thank you everyone for listening. And I would love it if you took a screenshot of this episode and shared it on your Instagram stories. And you can tag me, Hey Andrea Owen, and Jess King NYC. Is that right? That's your Instagram handle, right?
Yeah. I want to take a screenshot right now. Ready? Smile.
Everyone, thank you for listening. You know how valuable I know that your time is, and I'm so blessed that you come and spend it here with me and my guests. And remember, it's our life's journey to make ourselves better humans and our life's responsibility to make the world a better place. Bye, everyone. Hey there. Thank you so much for sticking with us through the entirety of this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. And just a reminder, if you have not pre-ordered your copy of Make Some Noise, it is available on Amazon, online. You can pre-order it in Audible, and it will be in bookstores August 31st, but it would be extraordinarily helpful if you pre-ordered it. You can find all the info at andreaowen.com/noise. You can pick and choose where you want to pre-order it, and that is also where you can grab all the fantastic bonuses. The workbook, the book plate, the free book club, a chance to win some fabulous prizes, including my other book signed and personalized to you, free coaching, gift cards, so many amazing things. Head on over to andreaowen.com/noise, and I thank you so much for your support. See you next week.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.